The subject of today's study is mental factors. We learned something about mental factors in lecture 2. Mental factors are one of the four ultimate truths, and they are called cetasikas in Pali. And they are defined as those which arise together with Chaita. So they always accompany Chaita. And their characteristics are arising together with Chaita, perishing together with Chaita, having the same object as Chaita, and also having the same base. Base means eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. And the same body and the heart. So that having the same base as the Chaita. They are actually states of mind. They are like color to pure water. Chaita is like pure water, and cetasikas are like color. So when a Chaita comes into combination with some of the cetasikas, then that Chaita is said to be a beautiful Chaita or wholesome Chaita or unwholesome Chaita, depending on whether the mental factors are wholesome or unwholesome, beautiful or not beautiful. And there are altogether 25 of these mental factors, and they are grouped as anyasamana, common to others. There are 13 common to others, 14 unwholesome, and 25 beautiful. Now the first group, the common to others, there are altogether 13, and they are called anya samana in Pali. And it is a strange name. Anya means other, and samana means common. So they are called common to others, or anya samana, because they are compatible with both sobhana, or beautiful chaitas, and non-beautiful chaitas. Now, can you distinguish beautiful chaitas and non-beautiful chaitas from the chart? The first four columns are non-beautiful, and the rest are beautiful. And these cetasikas are compatible with both non-beautiful and beautiful cetas. So they are called anya samana. Now with regard to beautiful cetas, non-beautiful cetas are called others. And with regard to non-beautiful cetas, beautiful cetas are called others. It is relative. So if you are on this side, then the other side is the other. And if you are on the other side, this side is the other. And since they are common to both beautiful and non-beautiful chaitas, they are called anya samana, common to others. And these 13 cetasikas are subdivided into two groups. The first group is universals, or in Pali, sabba chaita sadharana. There are seven of them, and the next group is called particulars, or pekenaka. So the first group consists of seven, and they are called universals, literally common to all chaitas. Sadharana and samana have the same meaning here, to be common to. And sabha means all, and chaita means chaita. So common to all chaitas. They accompany all chaitas, or each and every one of the chaitas. So whenever a chaita arises, any of the chaita arises, these seven always accompany that chaita. So every chaita is not without any one of these seven mental factors. And that's why they are called universals, or we can call them common to all. The first is, I give the Pali also so that you we do not misunderstand. The Pali word is passa, and it is called contact. It is the contact of senses or sense organs and objects. So when there is the coming together of sense organ, objects, and consciousness, this contact also arises. So it is not just the coming together of the three, the senses, the object, and consciousness. It arises through this coming together of the three. When an object comes into the avenue of one of the senses, and there is this coming together of the object and senses, and when these two come together, the chitta, the consciousness also arises, and when these three come together, the contact also arises. And there are some similes given by the commentators to understand them better. So on the sheets, the similes which I found in the commentaries are given. They are named Chittasikas and similes. So contact is compared to hideless cow because it is habitat of feelings. And this is not its characteristic, but if you remember the teaching of dependent origination, vedana or feeling arises conditioned by contact. So when a cow is hideless, when you skin the cow and the cow has no hide, then all sorts of insects, flies, gnats, and mosquitoes and insects come and bite it. So it is the habitat of feelings. It is the contact is the habitat of feeling. That means contact is the condition for feeling. Therefore, contact is compared to hideless cow. And then there are other similes given, and they are more convincing. Watering of mouth in one who sees another tasting vinegar or a ripe mango, or maybe it's a sour mango. So but whenever you see someone eat something which is sour, your mouth water. So that is caused by contact. And body shuddering in sympathetic person who sees another being hurt. So if somebody is hitting some other person, then you get something of the trembling of the body. Trembling of knees in timid person standing on the ground when he sees a man precariously balanced on a high tree branch. You may have been to a circus. When you see someone on the tightrope, that you have that feeling in your heart and in your chest. So that is because of contact. Loss of power of legs in one who sees something terrifying, such as a pisaja. Pisaja is a Pali word, means goblin or a ghost. So when somebody sees a ghost, he could not run. He just loses his power in his legs. Especially it is said that when dogs see the tigers or leopards, or even get the smell of a leopard, then they could not run. They just became lame. That is out of contact. So contact is like just like that. And it is not just the coming together of senses, object, and consciousness, but it arises through the coming together of these three. I think we'll have to rush. There are 52 chittasikas. So second is vedana feeling. I think you are familiar with feeling. Pleasurable feeling, displeasurable feeling, neutral feeling, and also there are more, two more feelings depending on the sensations in the body. Sukha and dukkha. And feeling is compared to a king who fully enjoys the taste of good food. That means other mental factors also enjoy or experience the object. But it is feeling or vedana which fully enjoys the taste of the object. That is why it is called feeling or vedana. And the next one is sanya, perception. And perception here means making marks of, so that you recognize it when you experience it later. So it is like carpenters making marks on timber, etc. So I don't know whether they put marks on timber in this country, because most things are ready-made in this country. But if you want to know later that this part is to be cut off, this part is to be retained or something, then they make marks on it. And so through these marks, they know which is to be sawed off and which is to be retained. So in the same way, sanya makes mark or recognizes a sign so that it recognizes it when it comes into contact with it later. So this is perception, so making marks. Sometimes perception can be very erratic. So we take a rope for the snake, we take a shrub, shaking at night for a ghost and so on. So this is the result of wrong perception. The next one is chetana, volition. It is very important. What we call karma is this mental factor. We'll have occasion for talking about karma later in this series. Now, karma is described as action, good action, bad action. But in fact, technically speaking, karma is volition, or something like will in the mind that arises when we do something, when we speak something, and so on. So the volition or chetana is the real karma. Although karma is popularly defined as good action or bad action. And this karma or chetana is very important among the 52 chetisikas, because it is this chetana, volition, through this chetana that we acquire kusala or akusala and get the results of both kusala and akusala. And volition is compared to a senior pupil or head carpenter. That means chetana urges others to take to do their own duties, and also it does its duty also. So it is like a senior pupil or head carpenter. He does his own work, and also he sees to it that other carpenters also work. In the same way, chetana helps others to do their own duties, and at the same time, it does its own duty. So it is important, and it is compared to senior pupil. And the fifth is ekaggada, one-pointedness of mind. It is, in other words, samadhi, concentration. So when we say concentration, we really mean this mental factor. Ekaggada. The literal meaning of it is having one object. That means mind dwelling on one object for a period of time. And sixth is jivitindriya, life faculty. And here life faculty means mental faculty of mental life. Because we will have another jivitindriya among the material properties. And life faculty is compared to water in lotus stalk. So the water in the lotus stalk keeps lotus stalk from getting withered. So in the same way, this life faculty maintains or sustains associate mental factors. It does not produce them, but it maintains them, it helps them to exist. That is why it is called jivita indriya, life faculty, mental life faculty. And the last one is mana sikara, S-I. Mana sikara, attention. Every act of mind needs some kind of attention. So attention is compared to driver of chariot with many horses. That means attention is just paying attention to the object, and it does not get involved in falling onto this side or the other side. It is like equanimity. See, driving the horses when the horses are going going evenly. So these seven are called sabba chaita sadharana or universals, and all these are present with every type of consciousness. So at every moment of consciousness, all these can be experienced. Maybe not all seven at the same, we may not know, or we may not be aware of all seven at the same time, but we can be aware of some of these mental factors, especially during the practice of vipassana meditation. The next group is pakinaka, particulars. Now, pakinaka literally means scattered. They are called scattered pakinaka because although they are common to sovana and non-sovana chetas, they do not arise with each and every one of them. So they are common to sovana and non-sovana alike, but they are not common to every of these chetas. They are common to, or they arise together with some of them, some of these chetas, and not with some of other chetas. Therefore, they come into combination with cheta in a scattered way. That's why they are called pakinaka in Pali. They are translated as particulars. There are six of them. And how many of them have we met? The first one, initial application, we have met. Yes. Actually, it is an effect of jhana. So initial application on application of mind, that means taking the mind to the object. And the second, vichara, sustained application, is keeping the mind there. And in many types of consciousness, they arise together, but in some, only one of them arises. And they are compared to, the difference between vitaka and vichara is on another sheet. So you have to be going to the sheets back and forth. So difference between vitaka and vichara. The first impact of mind on the object is vitaka, and the act of keeping mind anchored to the object is vichara. So vitaka takes the mind to the object and vichara keeps it there. Something like that. So vitaka is like the striking of a bell, the first striking of the bell, you hear the sound. And then vichara is like the ringing of the bell. So after you strike the bell, it rings for some time. So vichara is like that. Or vitaka is like birds spreading out its wings when about to soar into the air, like an airplane about to rise in the air. And vichara is like the birds planing with outspread wings after soaring into the air. So flying or gliding through the air. And vitaka is like a bee diving towards a lotus. And vichara is like the bees buzzing above the lotus. Vitaka is like the hand that grips firmly. And vichara is like the hand that drops. That means when you want to clean a vessel, and you grip the vessel with one hand, and clean it with another. So vitaka is like gripping the vessel, and vichara is like rubbing the vessel. Sometimes the word rubbing in Pali, anumajana, is used of the vichara. So vitaka and vichara, although they arise at the same time with one particular cheta, they have this difference. And then the number 10, the third, adhimokkha, it is decision. So there is some kind of decision with many chetas. And this decision is compared to a doorpost, because when you decide something, you are firm on it. So there is firmness in it, and so it is compared to a doorpost. And next is viriya, effort or energy. And this is mental effort or mental energy, not physical. Physical effort may be some other thing, but viriya means mental effort. And it is evident when you practice meditation. So you need mental effort to keep your mind on the object. Without mental effort, your mind will not stay there. So you have to put forth effort when you practice meditation. And effort is that which supports other mental factors, and so it is compared to a supporting pillars. When a house is old and say it is not strong, then you have to put some pillars or some posts to make it to keep it from falling down. You may not have seen such posts or pillars in this country, but in countries in Asia, you may have seen some houses, old houses, supported by extra posts or pillars. And also, effort is compared to a reinforcement in the army. So, suppose there is a battle and they're fighting, and say the one side is losing, and then the reinforcement was sent to them, and so they became strong again. So viriya is like that. When you have viriya, you become strong, and you can do what you like. You can practice meditation and so on. Making a choice is also adhimokkha, yeah. And then piti, joy. So it now you see, piti, joy, is not feeling in Abhidhamma. Vedana is one thing and piti is another. And they coexist or they arise together. So the pleasurable feeling and piti are two different things in Abhidhamma. So piti is an interest in pleasurable things, and sukha or happiness is the real enjoyment of that pleasurable thing, object. So piti and sukha, the difference between piti and sukha is also to be noted. So on the sheet, we have the difference between piti and sukha. Contentedness at getting a desirable object. When you get a desirable object and you are contented with it, then there is piti. And when you actually experience it, then you get sukha. And when a man exhausted in a desert saw or heard about a pond on the edge of a wood, that is piti. When and when he went into the wood shade and used the water, then it is sukha. So when you heard that there's going to be it will be dinner, you have piti, and when you actually enjoy dinner, then there is sukha. Where there is piti, there is sukha. So piti is always accompanied by sukha, but where there is sukha, there is not necessarily piti. Sometimes piti may not be, sukha may not be accompanied by piti. So wherever there is piti, there is sukha. But wherever there is sukha, there may not be piti. And yeah, you may not understand it, but when we study the combination of chetasikas and cheta, we will come to that. You know, you remember the jhana consciousness, right? The third jhana consciousness, how many factors are there? Piti, sukha, and ekagata, three. But the fourth jhana, sukha and ekagata, no piti. So there can be sukha without piti, but no piti without sukha. Right. And piti is included in sankhara khanda, and sukha is included in vedana khanda. Sankhara khanda means the aggregate of mental formation. And vedana khanda means aggregate of feeling. I hope you are familiar with the teaching of five aggregates. Aggregate of matter or corporeality, aggregate of feeling, of perception, of mental formation, and of consciousness. So piti belongs to sankhara, mental formation group, and sukha belongs to vedana or feeling group. So this is their difference. And then the last one is chanda, cognition. Peculiar word, cognition. It's not much use, right? It is some kind of desire. But when we say desire, we we tend to connect it with attachment. So I don't want to call it desire, but it is a kind of desire without attachment. It can be accompanied by attachment, or it may not be accompanied by attachment. But it is just the will to do. Something like intention. Yeah, the will to do. And it is compared to what? Extending of hand to pick up something. So you extend your hand to pick up something, and this chanda or cognition is compared to that. You may not be, or you are not attached to the thing, but you just pick it up. Another example is the archer is picking up the arrow to shoot. He has no attachment to the arrow, but he picks it up to shoot. So his extending his hand is like chanda. So there can be good chanda and there can be bad chanda. I mean, wholesome or unwholesome. The desire to practice meditation, the desire to help others, desire to study Dhamma is good chanda. And desire to possess things or desire to hurt other people is unwholesome chanda. So chanda can be wholesome or unwholesome. Chitana is chanda is a mere will. just a mere desire to do. And chitana has something like a force. Like action, yeah. Chitana is the most active among the 50 chetasikas. That is why the third aggregate is called sankhara khanda. That means a group of chetasikas headed by sankhara, actually. So these are the six particulars. The next are unwholesome akusala. There are altogether 14 of them. The first is moha, delusion, ignorance. And moha can mean not knowing as well as knowing wrongly. So if you know something wrongly, it is also moha. And if you don't know about things, don't know about the nature of things, and that is also moha. And no simile is given in the commentaries, but our teacher said that moha is comparable to smoke or cloud. So when there is smoke, you cannot see clearly, and when there is cloud, then you cannot see things. So it is like smoke or cloud. The next one is ahirika, moral shamelessness. Shamelessness in doing things that are immoral, that are unwholesome. And anuttaban, the next one is moral fearlessness. That means does not fear anything, don't afraid to do anything immoral. And moral shamelessness is compared to a village pig, which is not disgusted of excrement. And moral fearlessness is compared to a moth, which is not afraid of fire. So it just flies into the fire and get burnt. There are counterparts of them among the beautiful chetasikas. We'll come to them later. And number 17 is udhajja. You have met udhajja. I mean restlessness. This is restlessness of mind. That means mind's inability to be really on the object. It is a little, say, away from the object or removed from the object, something like that. And udhajja is restlessness is compared to what? Water whipped by wind. So when there is a wind and water, the water is not calm. And another example is like the ashes. When you throw a stone into the heap of ashes, so the ashes come up and so it is not clear. Restlessness is like that. 18 is loba, attachment. It is not difficult to understand. And the, we always experience attachment. And it is compared to monkey slime. It's a glue. Huh? There is a what? Not monkey slime. What slime? Actually, it is a glue you get from sap. A tree. Sap? Oh, it is sticky. That's right. Yes. So when you want to catch money, you use it's like in the modern days you have something which you can catch flies with. Fly paper, something like that. So it's like monkey slime. So it sticks. Loba. And the next one is dikti, wrong view. There is no simile for dikti. So taking things to be permanent and believing that there is no rebirth and there is no karma and there are no results of karma and so on. So taking that way or believing that way is called deity, wrong view. Amoha has a characteristic of covering the object so that you do not see it clearly. And deity takes it as, say, not as it really is. And the word deity literally means just view, not wrong or right. But in most cases, the word deity is used for wrong view. There is one word, samma deity, among the eight factors of path, in the Noble Eightfold Path, you have right understanding or right knowledge. And that is, there it is said, samma deity. Samma means right, so right view or right knowledge. But in most cases, deity is used to mean wrong view. And next one is mana, conceit, pride. And it is like madness. It is like a banner. That means the flag is always up there. So when you're proud, you are always up there in the sky. Mana. And then dosa, ill will. Dosa means anger, hatred, and also depression, and also fear. So fear is a kind of the dosa in
Abhidhamma.
It is passive dosa, while anger is active dosa. Then issa, jealousy, that means when you are prosperous, I don't like you, something like that. That is jealousy, issa. And machirya, the next one is avariciousness. Now machirya always accompanies two chetas accompanied by ill will. So it is always with domanasa or dosa. So avariciousness is not stinginess. It is something like intolerance of one's property being common to others. Suppose I have this thing, I want to use it for myself. Then if you come and use it, I don't like it. And that intolerance is what we mean by machariya, avariciousness. So machariya does not accompany loba, it accompanies dosa. Although it may cause by attachment, because I am attached to this thing, and so if someone comes and make use of it, I don't like it. And the next one is kukkucha, remorse. Remorse for having something, having done something wrong in the past, or having not done something good in the past. Both are called remorse. Sometimes we did something wrong and we repent. Sometimes we did not do something good and then we repent for that. So remorse has these two aspects. Yeah, when remorse comes to your mind is not accompanied by good feeling. So that is why remorse is said to be unwholesome. It has some nature of dosa, because when remorse comes to you, you don't feel good. You feel something like displeasure. The next 25 and 26, Tina and Migdha, they are always together, sloth and torpor. That actually they are sluggishness of citta and sluggishness of cetasikas. So sloth and torpor are always, almost always with us when we practice meditation. So you sit for some time and then you begin to feel sleepy. That means sloth and torpor are coming to you. do you use sticks here? Sloth and torpor. And the last one is vichikicca. We have met vichikicca. So it accompanies the last of the 12 akusala chetas. It is doubt. Doubt about the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. Doubt about the way to liberation. Doubt about the dependent origination and others. Not just the ordinary doubt, but doubt about the Dhamma, the Buddha, and the Sangha. This is vichikicca. So these 14 are common to the 12 unwholesome chetas only. They will not accompany any other chetas. So they will accompany only one or two or some of the 12 unwholesome chetas, the first column. Now the next group is sobhana, beautiful, because they have beautiful qualities. And it always accompany displeasurable feeling in Pali Domanasa. So the number 21, 22, 23, 24, these four always accompany the two chaitas rooted in ill will among the 12 unwholesome chaitas. So they are always accompanied by displeasurable feeling. Yeah, but they have this. They have the common characteristic of making the chaita different, making the chaita worse or something. Now, when we are happy or when we feel good, the chaita is said to be in a normal state. But when there is anger in us or depression in us, it is said to be destroyed by anger or ill will. Its good nature is destroyed and it becomes bad or something. So these have this common nature that to make us feel bad. So they always accompany one of the two chaitas rooted in ill will or hatred. So the next group is beautiful, 25 of them. And the first are 19, which are common to beautiful. So they will accompany every one of the beautiful types of consciousness. That means from the fifth column onwards. The first four columns are non-sovana, non-beautiful, and the rest are beautiful. So these 19 will accompany every one of the chaitas in those columns. Now the first one is saddha, faith or confidence. So confidence is, I think, a better word for saddha, because we do not mean blind faith, but faith founded upon knowledge or wisdom. So it is better to translate it as confidence, but we can say faith if you like. And it is compared to what? Water clearing gem. That means when we have faith, when we have confidence, our minds become clear. So it is like a water clearing gem. Now, there were universal monarchs in the olden days. And it is said that they possess a kind of gem. So when they went for fighting or whatever, and when the people cannot get clear water, they just pick up the water and then the king put the gem in the water, and as soon as the gem is put in the water becomes clear. So, water clearing gem. In the same way, our minds, our chaitas may be clouded by unwholesome mental factors. But when confidence enters our mind, or when confidence arises in our minds or with our chaita, then our chaita becomes clear. So confidence is, or saddha is, compared to water clearing gem. And also saddha is compared to plunging into the flood. That means something like bravery. When you have faith, when you have confidence, and you do things with what do you call courage, something like that. When you lack faith, you don't dare do things. You are afraid of mistakes, or you are afraid of failure. But when you have confidence, you just do it. So it's like plunging into the flood. Suppose there's flood and many people don't dare to go into the flood, and then one man comes and just follow me, I will go in front of you, and then he plunges into the flood and so on. Saddha. Next one, mindfulness, sati, or remembering. Sati is really remembering, mindfulness. It is similar to perception. But when we have strong perception, then you have good mindfulness. Number 30, hiri, moral shame. And number 31, odaba, moral fear. That is shame to do immoral things and fear to do immoral things. And these two are said to be the protectors of society. So long as these two exist in the people and the society. Sati, or remembering. Sati is really remembering, mindfulness. It is similar to perception. But when we have strong perception, then you have good mindfulness. Number 30, hiri, moral shame. And number 31, odaba, moral fear. That is shame to do immoral things and fear to do immoral things. And these two are said to be the protectors of society. So long as these two exist in the people, then the society is in a good shape. Hiri and otapa. So hiri is, or moral shame is compared to a respectable woman. Thinking of her birth, thinking of her reputation, she is disgusted of doing wrong things, or she is disgusted of being unfaithful. And otapa is, moral fear is compared to a courtesan. A courtesan is afraid of getting pregnant.
That doesn't translate culturally to us.
That's right, yeah. So you have to think of the olden days. So you do not do something for fear of censure from others, something like that. So that is called otapa, moral fear. And then next one, alobha, non-attachment. It is compared to a water drop on lotus leaf. So it does the drop of water does not stick to the lotus leaf. So non-attachment is like that. And adosa is non-hatred, goodwill. Adosa is simply loving kindness. So loving kindness is adosa. Not anger, not hatred, goodwill. It is compared to a gentle friend, a friend who is friendly to us. And 34, tatra majadada, a long name. Equanimity. Tatra majadada really means like tatra majadada, being in the middle, so not falling into pleasure or displeasure, or not falling into attachment or hatred, but just in the middle. Equanimity. And it is compared to the driver of a chariot with many horses. Again, so when the horses are running smoothly, the driver doesn't have to be concerned about the horses. So he is something like indifferent to these horses. So equanimity is like that. And equanimity is actually very refined in the states of jhanas. Although it is not one of the jhana factors, but in the suttas, sometimes equanimity is called upekkha, indifference. So it is very important to understand when you come across the word upekkha in Pali, whether it is whether it means feeling upekkha or this equanimity. Sometimes Upekkha is used for equanimity and sometimes for indifferent feeling. And then we have prayers, kaya pasadi, citta pasadi, tranquility of nama kaya and tranquility of citta. Here nama kaya means just cetasikas, kaya cetasikas, mental factors. Nama means mental and kaya means group. So mental group here means cetasikas, because citta will come. So the first one is tranquility of nama kaya, and the second one, citta pasadi, is tranquility of citta. And then next group, kaya lahuta, citta lahuta, lightness of nama kaya and lightness of citta. Sometimes you feel lightness in your mind and sometimes your mind is heavy. And then kaya mududa, citta mududa, pliancy of nama kaya and pliancy of citta. Mududa really means softness. So soft, it is compared to a leather well tanned. And then kaya kamanyada, citta kamanyada, adaptability of nama kaya and adaptability of citta. And it is compared to what? Refining of gold. That means when you gold is refined and it is easy to make things out of gold. Or it is like, say, when the iron is hot, red hot, and you can make it into any shape you like. So, what's that?
Malleability.
Yeah? Yes, yeah. It's a difficult to pronounce that word. Yeah. And then proficiency, kaya bagunyada, citta bagunyada, proficiency of nama kaya and proficiency of citta. Similes are not given for them. And then kayu jukada, chaitu jukada, the rectitude or straightness of nama kaya and straightness of citta. That is the Pali word pagunyada means being familiar with. So familiarity with cetasikas, familiarity with citta. That is translated as proficiency here. If you are familiar with a subject, you are said to be paguna in with regard to that subject. Paguna is the word from which the word pagunya is derived. And kayu jugada and cetu jugada, they are a rectitude or straightness of cetasikas and straightness of citta. So these 19 are common to all beautiful types of consciousness. And the next group, virati or abstinence. Samma vacha, right speech, samma kamanda, right action, samma ajiva, right livelihood. Where do you find these three? Among the Eightfold Path. So the middle three are called right speech, right action, and right livelihood. But according to Abhidhamma, they are called virati, abstinences. That means only when you abstain from something do they arise in your mind. Otherwise, no. So maybe this is the negative aspect of right speech and so on. But since they are called abstinences, they arise only when you abstain from something, some wrongdoing or evil conduct or whatever. Now, suppose there is an occasion for killing an animal and you refrain from killing it, you abstain from killing it, then at that moment there will be right action or samma kamanta arising in your mind. Now, when you are meditating, it will not arise in your mind because you have no occasion to refrain, abstain from killing. You just sit and practice meditation.
No.
It It has to do with speech, action, and livelihood. And abstention from wrong speech, the lying, harsh speech, backbiting, and talking nonsense, that is right speech. Abstention from wrongdoing, that is killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. And right abstention from wrong livelihood, that means earning one's livelihood by hurting people, killing, or there are some traits that a person who wants to keep his livelihood pure should not do, like selling poison, selling weapons, and so on. Now, with regard to abstinences, the commentaries say that there are three kinds of them. Abstinence as occasion arises, abstinence through observance of precepts, and abstinence through total eradication of defilements. So there are three kinds of abstinences. The first one is abstinence as occasion arises. That means you do not take any precepts, but when the occasion arises, you just abstain from it. Say you do not take any of the precepts, but there is an occasion for you, say, to kill, and you do not kill, you abstain from killing. And that kind of abstinence is called abstinence as occasion arises. There's a story of two brothers whose mother was ill, and the physician said that the flesh of a hare was required. So the elder brother sent his younger brother to a forest and to catch a hare and kill it. So the younger brother went into the forest, and when the hare saw him, the hare ran away, but it was caught in the creepers, and then it made noise. So the younger brother went there and caught the hare, but after catching it, he thought, it is not right for me to take one life to save another, because he wanted to save the life of his mother. So he said, it's not right for me to do that. So he let it go and went back home. And his elder brother asked him whether he had got the hair, and he said no. And he told him what happened. So the elder brother scolded him. But it is said that he went to his mother, the younger brother went to his mother and say some words of truth. He said, I do not remember having intentionally taken the life of a creature since I was born. So he said this as the asseveration of truth. So by saying this truth, or by the power of this truthful saying, say, may my mother get well. And it is said that his mother's disease was healed. So that kind of abstention is the abstention as occasion arises. He did not take any precepts before that, but he abstains from it when the occasion arose. The second one is the abstinence through observance of precepts. In this case, say you take some precepts, and then you are on a question that you can or you may kill, and you do not kill because you say to yourself, "Oh, I have taken the precepts and I must keep them," and so you refrain, you abstain from it, and that is the abstinence through observance of precepts. See, there was a man, a farmer, it is said in the books. He went to plow his field, and before he went to the field, he went to his village monk and took precepts from him. Then he went to the field to plow. So when he was plowing, his ox got lost. So he went in search of his ox, And he went up a mountain, and on the mountain he was caught by a snake, a big snake. So a big snake coiled around him, but he had an axe in his hand. So first he thought, I will cut the head of this snake. And later he said, he said to himself, I have taken precepts from a very revered teacher. So it is not right for me, it is not good for me to break the precepts. Then later, he wanted to kill the snake again. I will cut its head off. Then he thought again, it is not proper for me, who have taken precept from the elder, to break the precept. So for three times, he was undecided what to do. But after thinking that way for three times, he said, I will sacrifice my life, but not the precept. And so he threw the axe away and let the snake kill me, he told himself. But at that moment, the snake uncoiled and then went away. So that kind of abstinence is through observance of precept. Because you have taken the precept, you abstain from something. So like... Both are akusala, killing a human being or killing a snake.
So you sacrifice your karma by killing the animal rather than letting the animal sacrifice
his karma. He is not killing himself. He just give up. Because if he kills the snake, then he will break the precept. So he would rather give up his life than break the precepts. It is not said to be killing oneself.
It's like asking the tiger to be a bitch.
But in the story, the snake had the opportunity to kill the tiger through where the axe and didn't.
We can take abstinence, two abstinences here, right? The man's abstinence to kill the snake and the snake's abstinence to kill the man. And in this case, the abstinence of the snake is on occasion. And the abstinence of the man is on precepts. The third one is abstinence through total eradication of defilements. That can...
I know, the guy was enlightened.
That's right. That can happen only to an arahant. Yeah. For arahants, even the cheta does not arise that I will kill or something. So for details, please see Expositor. These stories are given there, page 136 and 137. Now, next group, Appamanya, limitless ones. They are sometimes translated as illimitable. But I think limitless or boundless is better than illimitable because they have no bounds, they have no limits. That is why they are called limitless. They are called Appamanya in Pali. And limitless here means they take limitless or boundless beings as object. So when you practice, compassion or sympathetic joy, you have to take all beings. That is why they are called appamanya. So I think limitless or boundless ones is better than illimitable ones.
They're often called Brahma
Baharas. Yes,
I actually haven't heard this term.
This term is in Pali Sutras, this term is used, and also in Abhidhamma. But Brahma Vihara is more common and more popular than the word Appamanya. Now, see the book of analysis. There's the book of analysis is the second book of Abhidhamma, and there the practice of the loving kind, I mean, the four Brahma Viharas is given. And let me read one regarding the loving kindness. If you know about loving kindness, you know about compassion and so on. Herein, a bhikkhu dwells with mind accompanied by loving kindness, suffusing one direction, also a second direction, also a third direction, also a fourth direction, thus above, below, thus above, below, around, everywhere, identifying himself with all, he dwells, suffusing the world of all beings with mind accompanied by loving kindness, extensive, sublime, unlimited, without enmity, without ill will. So actually, when you practice loving kindness on others, you have to take all beings. First, you may practice loving kindness to a person, to one person, two person, or to those in this building, and then to those in this city, and so on. But you must reach all beings ultimately. So that is why they are called appamanya. And here only two of the appamanyas are given, right? Compassion and sympathetic joy. And compassion means desire to remove, or desire for beings to get free from suffering. So, compassion takes actually beings who are suffering, who are in distress. If you see someone who is suffering, who is in distress, you have something like trembling in the heart. And that is what we call karuna in Pali, compassion. So compassion, when you practice compassion, you say, may he be free from suffering, may he be free from affliction or something. And mudita is a sympathetic joy. That is feeling happy with the other person's success, other person's prosperity. So when other persons are prosperous, you feel happy. And that is sympathetic joy or mudita. So mudita takes people in prosperity or in happiness as object. But all of those who are in distress, all of those who are in in prosperity. Now, Michael asked me, there are four Brahma Viharas. I think you are all familiar with this. Brahma Vihara is translated as divine abidings. Vihara here means living, not a monastery. a monastery is called Vihara in Pali. But here Vihara means just living. And Brahma means Brahma or sublime. So sublime abidings or sublime living. Or Brahma can mean the real Brahmas. And Brahma Vihara means living like Brahmas. It is said that Brahmas live practicing these four kinds of meditation. They don't have other things to do in the world of the Brahmas. So they just practice one of these four, and they spend time with these four meditations. So they are called Brahma Vihara, living like Brahmas. So there are four of them: loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. Here only two are given, because loving kindness is represented by adosa, Chittisika number 33, and equanimity is represented by number 34, Tatra Majadada, which is equanimity itself. They are limited in the sense that they take boundless beings.
But not exclusively. That's why they're not included. Under the limitless ones, they say because it takes boundless beings as an object. But by putting loving kindness not there, does that mean they can be either taking boundless beings as an object or just taking other objects?
They take the object of these four Brahma Viharas is the concept of beings, or just beings. We take them as beings. When we practice loving kindness or any one of these four, we are dealing with concepts. We are not concerned about ultimate truth, because we are taking as these persons as beings, and then suffusing them with loving kindness. That may they be free from enmity, may they be free from affliction, and so on. Now the last one is called Panyendriya, faculty of wisdom. It is Panya, and at the same time it is one of the faculties treated in the 7th chapter of the manual, Abhidhammata Sangha. The Pali word Indriya means, to have control, or something or someone having control. So Panyendriya means the Panya which has control over penetrating into the nature of things. And it is translated as faculty in English, so faculty of wisdom. Indriya is like ministers in a government. So there are ministers of say internal affairs, and minister of external affairs, minister of war, and so on. And they have full control over their respective departments. In the same way, these Panya and others have control over their functions. That is why they are called Indriya in Pali. Actually, Panyendriya and Panya is the same. And it is sometimes called Amoha, non-delusion. Sometimes Vijja. Sometimes investigation of Dhamma, and so on. So it is the Panya we met when we study the sense via beautiful consciousness. So altogether we have these 52 chetasikas, or mental factors, and some of these mental factors may be more interesting than others. And what we call emotions are just some of them, like dosa, samachari, and so on. And there is a wealth of information about these individual chetasikas in the path of purification, and their characteristics, and their function, and their manifestation, and their proximate causes. And if we could make a detailed study of these, it would be very, I think, fruitful, but this time we cannot. And there are five aggregates taught in Buddhism, and the 52 chetasikas constitute three aggregates. Now, you know the five aggregates. Aggregate of metta, we'll come to that later. And then aggregate of feeling is the vedana, feeling mental factor. And aggregate of perception, sanya, is the sanya mental factor. And then the third is the aggregate of mental formations. And the aggregate of mental formations really mean the 50 chetasikas headed by chetana. So we have vedana as aggregate of feeling, and sanya or perception as aggregate of sanya. And the remaining 50 are all collectively called aggregate of mental formations. Actually, the group of mental factors headed by chetana or sankhara. And the last one is the aggregate of consciousness, which we have studied. So we have only one more aggregate to study, and we'll study it in like seven maybe matter. Seven?
Yeah.
Yes. And next week we will study how the mental factors arise together with chaitasik. I mean chaitas. How many of the certain chaitasikas arise with a given chaita, or with how many chaitas a certain chaitasika arises, or in other words, the combination of chaitas and chaitasikas. So we will study them. We study the combination and two ways, chaitasika-chaita combination and chaita-chaitasika combination next week.
We have the notes for the next 2 weeks, 6 and 7.
Concepts as objects.
Limitless, boundless beings.
Limitless or boundless beings as objects.
Yes.
And then loving kindness and equanimity, do they also have limitless beings as objects?
Yes, yes.
And then why are not they included in the limitless group?
Yes. Because they are given in the other groups. That is why they are not shown here in the list of 52 chaitasikas.
Right.
These two are only given as limitless here, but in fact all four are given among in these 52 chaitasikas.
Right. But is the reason. There seems like there's something special about the limitless object, the limitless being as object. And why are these qualities seem to have the same, they're exalted, they're Brahma Viharas.
Yeah.
And the question is, why are they not included in that same category?
They are included in the same category.
But they're also included someplace else, and so there.
But here, since they have been mentioned before, they are not mentioned again here.
Okay. But is the reason they were mentioned before that these cannot take a limited being as object, whereas these two can?
No. All these, when you practice, when they become the Brahma Vihara, then they must take limitless beings. Only then will they be called limitless ones, or in Pali, apamanya. So these four, all these four take limitless beings as object.
Always.
Yes, but ultimately. Because when you practice loving-kindness meditation, you can begin with yourself, or you just begin with yourself. Say, may I be well, happy, and peaceful.
Right.
And then you say, may my teachers be well, happy, and peaceful. So not limitless yet, right?
Right.
And may my friends be, may my enemies be, and so on. Then last, you say, may all beings be well, happy, and peaceful. So in the end, you must reach all beings. So that is why they are called limitless ones.
But loving kindness and equanimity are common. You always find them with wholesome.
Yes.
But you don't necessarily find compassion, sympathetic joy in common
Not all beautiful chaitas.
But you always find equanimity and loving kindness.
Yes, that's right.
So they need to be in this category.
Yes. Yeah.
But you also can.
And when they become limitless ones, they are specially developed.
Right, so they're not always limitless, but when they're specially developed, then they are limitless.
Yeah.
But when you do the, are they always, so these would have to be, are these always limitless? You could never have a limited.
Actually, you can have limited beings as object, but
yeah.
Ultimately you have to be okay. To take limitless beings.
Okay.
So mostly we practice loving kindness meditation, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
When we practice loving kindness meditation, as I said before, we begin with ourselves or with individuals with limited number of beings. And then you widen the range of your beings little by little until you reach all beings.
Can you practice compassion meditation?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's...
When you practice... No.
You can do... Loving kindness is one thing and compassion is something else. So you can
That's right. Loving kindness and compassion are different.
So why do they have this category here?
We're following up.
No, I mean, well, if it could be here too... Why is there this special category?
Yes,
just those
No. As you said before, these are common to all sovereign chaitas, and they are not common to all sovereign chaitas.
Okay. So it has to be separate.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, this is like calculus.
I know.
It's like if then else.
Yeah. I have
a good question.
Why? Why are feeling and perception separated? They're both chetasikas, they're both mental factors. Why are they separated when you think of the aggregates? As a definition of the five, why are they separated from just saying mental formations?
No. Depending on feeling, you get attached to things in the world.
Yes.
And depending on perception, the same thing happens.
Okay.
Because of the perception, you have the attachment to the world.
Yeah, 10 to 5.
And so they are what do you call that? They are singled out as aggregates. But the others are not like them. So they are all grouped together as one.
But do the other ones sometimes stimulate attachment too, or is it mainly in this area that you you get reaction to actually disliking
yes.
something?
Because according to the dependent origination,
yes,
the condition, and the Vedana is a condition for. Thirst, dana, right?
That's right.
That's craving.
Right. Okay. And then perception.
Through perception, you experience the object more fully.
Yes.
Perception helps you to experience the object more fully.
Right.
That is why it is singled out also.
And then that would stimulate a reaction.
Yeah.
Also.
It is something like. Let me see. Putting some spices in the dishes or something.
Yes. Yes. Okay. You know, when you talk about mindfulness.
Yes.
Like Ruth will say, the natural result of being very mindful, or a lot of these things, I mean, will be equanimity, loving kindness, compassion. You know, I mean, that would be the natural way for the mind to be.
Yeah.
With, like, as if mindfulness were the basis of actually of these things.
Yeah. This mindfulness arises together with all these mental factors.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, you almost
yes.
always have
yeah.
mindfulness.
But when during meditation, we develop mindfulness
right.
More fully.
Right.
You know, even though you do not practice meditation, you do something good, and you study, and you have mindfulness. It's there. But when you practice meditation, mindfulness is
specially developed.
Well, with Vipassana practice, mindfulness is just that's really what you're really developing.
That's right. Yes.
Why out of that? That's interesting. That becomes kind of the basis for developing the rest of these things in your mind.
Because it helps concentration. Because it is like this. Say, you make effort.
Yes.
That is virya. So with effort, your mind is on the object. Mm-hmm. And that is mindfulness.
Yes.
And when you have mindfulness, you have concentration. So mindfulness helps concentration. Without mindfulness, there can be no concentration. And only when you have concentration can you have understanding, panya, penetration. So mindfulness is beneficial to concentration. And concentration helps panya to arise. So they are called faculties. There are five faculties when you practice meditation. And the first one is confidence. If you do not have confidence in the practice, you will not practice at all. So you have that kind of faith or confidence. And then effort. And then mindfulness. And then concentration. And then panya or penetration. So these five are almost always present when you have good concentration, when you have good meditation. Before your mind is not concentrated, you may not have panya at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It may be lacking sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But when your mind becomes, when your concentration becomes better, and you can be on the object for a long time, then panya also arises. So these five faculties always work together. If any one of these is lacking, then your mind meditation is not working. It's not good. And especially, they are to be balanced. One must not in excess of the other. Especially in meditation practice, especially between effort and concentration. Too much effort and you become agitated.
Mm-hmm.
You lose concentration. And too much concentration and too little effort, you become sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
So these two have to be balanced. Sometimes when you practice meditation, you feel something like sleepy. You are not really tired.
Mm-hmm.
But meditation becomes so easy for you, mm-hmm, that you lack energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so concentration takes the better of it. And so you tend to become sleepy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you are too energetic and too eager to achieve. And so you put more effort. And the more effort you put, the less you get concentration. Your concentration is gone because you are agitated at that time. So these two have to be balanced. So these are the five faculties.
Mm-hmm.
So mindfulness is conducive to concentration, and concentration is conducive to wisdom or understanding.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Still back to that same question again.
Mm.
Mindfulness and equanimity are common to all the beautiful chetas.
Yes.
So that means that whenever the beautiful cheta is present, those two are present.
All 19 are present.
All 19 of these are present.
Yes.
Whenever there's a beautiful cheta.
Yes.
And then the compassion and sympathetic joy, these are present with some beautiful chetas?
Not with all. Only with some beautiful jetas, and we will come to it next week.
Okay.
How many jetas they accompany?
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
If you are curious now, you can look at the chart. There's a chart in the next.
Oh, okay.
Notes.
Huh? I didn't get the notes from next
you. Can
week.
Get the notes. No, these are my what.
But you can think about it.
I need number six.
Oh, not here.
You're talking about on the chart.
Oh, not chart here, right? Wait a minute.